Hello and welcome to Zack Attack. We're never going to be better than this. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe too.
And today's movie is Neighbors. And so as we go backwards in the chronology of Zac Efron, we're going from We Are Your Friends to Neighbors. And even though they're really, really different movies, like We Are Your Friends does not, I don't think it wants to be a comedy at all. This one's definitely a comedy.
Yeah.
I think that there's some real similarities in terms of growing up and maturity and, you know, sort of coming to grips with where you are in life. And I mean, it's a very different sort of delivery, and I don't know if that's necessarily the main point of this movie, but it was kind of weird to see like such similar themes in two very different movies.
Yeah, definitely. I think that you see a lot of similar Zac Efron actings as well.
I wonder how many of these movies, I mean, a lot of the ones that we have coming up, you know, Dirty Grandpa's about a young guy and an old guy. We'll be doing that soon. That Awkward Moment, I guess, is about, you know, coming of age. I feel like a lot of these Zac Efron movies are going to be the same in terms of, like...
Yeah, he's kind
of
typecasted, you know, right?
Yeah.
I wonder how long this is going to last. Like, he's not going to be young forever. Like, is he ever going to, like, come out of this? Like,
there is he ever going to be better than this?
Yeah. I think there's some kind of expiration on this, though. Like, he can't keep doing these, like, teen movies forever.
I mean, I really wonder... We talked about it a little bit last time with... We Are Your Friends, that it's not necessarily a great movie. This one I think is a good movie, but it's not really giving him anything challenging. I think that he's a good actor, but I really wonder when he's going to sort of take on more dramatic, more serious roles, because I don't think he's really... I mean, I'm not too familiar with his filmography in terms of, like, what we haven't seen, but I'm not sure how many actual serious roles he's taken on. So
I don't
like
think
you
any. I mean, like, yeah. Looking back on it, like, I agree, I haven't seen many of them either, but, like, I don't think he's done any serious roles.
Like, I wonder what kind of, you know, director is going to sort of take a chance on him, I guess. I mean, like, not that he necessarily does dramatic stuff, really, but, like, I could see him maybe plugging into, like, a Woody Allen movie, or maybe, you know, I don't know if Tarantino would ever put him in, but, like, these directors who are sort of known for, like, changing the scope of some actors' careers, I wonder who's going to be the first to really, or if it's just going to be some, you know, no-name director, or somebody we don't really know, or somebody who's not necessarily world-famous who's going to...
Scoop him up with something more
pivot,
interesting.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's a bad actor either. I mean, like, I think in this movie he was pretty good. Like, and it was much better without, like, the shitty dialogue and writing that we had in We Are Your Friends. Like, he's definitely not a bad actor. Like,
unlike We Are Your Friends, he's not the star here. The stars here are Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne and their baby Stella, who I think is my favorite character in this movie, because Stella's just the best. And I also love how much everybody loves Stella. And I did check, and the same two actresses, because she was played by twins or whatever, they will be back for Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising.
Oh, that's cool. They're keeping the same babies. Stella will be in. That's awesome.
Yep.
Nice. Wow.
A really weird sort of side story that doesn't have anything to do with Zac Efron is that I was watching, you know, trailers before some movie. I was like, that baby looks so familiar. And I looked it up when I got home. And it was the babies who played Stella played baby Trevor, so a little boy baby, very versatile, in Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. But like this
great scope. This baby has more acting range than Zac Efron does at this point.
Because Stella is like adorable, and like she's so like, I don't understand. You know, it's just it's great. And so like I guess I just have like baby recognition, like baby radar.
Apparently.
And I was just like, that baby looks so familiar, and it was the same baby.
Maybe
so.
You're pregnant.
But yeah, so Elise and Zoe Vargas had a very big 2014, two movies, but they haven't been in anything since then, so Neighbors 2 is their next thing, so they should be, I guess, 2 or 3 years old, so
cool.
We'll see what goes on.
We'll see.
Zach's like the leader of the fraternity that moves in next door that become the neighbors for Seth and Rose. And his best friend is played by Dave Franco, who's also amazing in this movie. I sort of wish he was in a little bit more.
Yeah, you can see, you can definitely see that Dave Franco is going to be great too, man. I think he's really funny. He's a funny kid.
He's real good. But like even like from the very beginning, like when they first move in, you can see that it's sort of like old versus young. That they don't want to be old, that they're, you know,
Seth Rogen doesn't want to, like, admit that he's, like, an adult now, that he has a house and a baby,
And they're still trying to have sex, and they're still trying to be, like, cool parents, and they're talking about, you know, like, baby's first rave, and, you know, trying to stay young even though they have a baby, and they're like, well, we could have it all, like, we can still be, like, the cool people and still have a baby, like, we could do it all, and, like, it's very clear that as the movie goes on, like, that's not possible.
Yeah.
But they're, like, afraid of being old and challenged by the youth, and then, you know, they come face-to-face with that when Zac Efron moves in next door, and they just, like, see who they were up close and personal.
Yeah, those are really funny. Like, Seth Rogen drops some great lines when he first sees Zac Efron. He's like, it looks like something gay guys designed in a laboratory.
He says, that guy's the sexiest guy I've ever seen, like something a gay guy designed in a laboratory.
Yeah, that was a great quote. That made me laugh really hard. It's good. This movie was great. I like that the Seth Rogen humor, it like is felt throughout the movie, even in Zac Efron's lines. So I really like that you can see that they made this movie super homoerotic between Zac Efron and Dave Franco, because like all of the other Seth Rogen movies are super homoerotic between like Seth Rogen and James Franco. So he just right. like kind of like paired it back to them and had them do like a younger version of it. It was cool. This is cool. This is a cool thing. I think that like Seth Rogen was making a joke movie about himself. Like, this is actually, I think it's much more related in the movie sense that Seth Rogen's like feeling old. It kind of feels like he made this movie and is like shooting it like he is, like he imagines himself being Zac Efron when he was a kid. That's why he has Dave Franco in it and stuff like that.
Well, actually, I'm looking now and it doesn't look like, I mean, I'm sure he, you know, improvised on set and everything, but it doesn't look like Seth Rogen wrote or directed. It was directed by this guy, Nicholas Stoller, who's known for directing, like, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, who's that's still in that same world.
Yeah, same
and
world.
Get Into the Greek. He's coming back for Neighbors 2, and it was written by these two guys who wrote something for James Franco. It looks like they're sort of writing partners. They wrote Neighbors and Neighbors 2, and they're writing, or they wrote Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, which is another Zac Efron movie coming out this year. So I guess they're sort of like,
cool. They're like on the
they're like
team.
The Zac Efron go-to guys. Yeah,
you can definitely feel that it's like Rogan jokes throughout though. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Like he definitely interjected some stuff. Whether or not he gets writing credit, I think that like a lot of these Zac Efron jokes came straight from Seth Rogen's head.
Probably. I mean, it's the same kind of stuff. It's a little bit less pot focused because I know you sort of hate the
stoner.
Yeah,
I hate the stoner humor. I hate the stoner humor. Seth Rogen's the only one that I can pretty much watch the stoner humor stuff of. But even some of his, like, you know, Pineapple Express and shit, like, I can't watch through those.
The drug jokes that are in this movie are sort of, like, few and far between, and I think that they work better because of that. Like, you know, when they show up next door and they're like, I don't remember
the line.
We don't
stay off the grass.
We don't stay off the grass, and they like, give, like, one little joint, and they're like, oh, like, that's, like, you guys are so cool. And, like, later, you know, he's doing mushrooms. But, like, it's not, like, super drug heavy.
No, it's not.
It's just, it works because it's not over the top.
Yeah, even for, like, a frat-themed party teen movie. And, like, you know, I mean, obviously we get, like, the whole pot montage at the end or whatever, but, like, it wasn't, I don't think it was too drug-focused. I enjoyed that part of it. They kept it pretty cool.
And so, like, as much as I like the part where there's basically, like, the prank war and that they're, you know, going back and forth.
Yeah,
and,
with, like, the airbags and stuff. And
yeah, and, like, Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne are trying to get them kicked out of the house, and the fraternity is doing everything that they can to just sort of piss them off because they're mad that they broke the no-snitching rule, basically.
Yeah.
As much as I like that, I love when Seth Rogen and Zac Efron are buddy-buddy in this movie.
Oh, agreed, yeah, agreed.
I could just watch them, you know, in the beginning and at the end, like, when they're just talking about, like, being Batman and talking about, like, a future where they have, like, walkie-talkies and, like, you know, how they're basically roommates.
Yeah, I wonder, like, if those dudes get along. They seem like they get along way too well on screen to not get along in real life. Like, I think that they actually do get along.
I just, it's so good, and I understand that, like, you know, you can't just have that the whole movie, pretty much, unless you just want it to be, like, some real laid-back thing. I understand that there needs to be conflict, but, like, I sort of wish that we had more of them as buddy-buddy, just because it's so funny to see them bounce off each other. And, like, I think that's maybe, you know, the funniest that Zac Efron ever is in the movie, because he's there with the guy who's going to make everybody around him funnier, and it's just great.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to get more of that in Neighbors 2 now that I think about it, you know? Like, maybe it'll be, like, them kind of, like, teaming up together against someone else. I think that, I'm sure that you're not the only one, we're not the only ones that felt like that those were some of the greatest parts of the movie. I think hopefully they play off that for the next one.
Yeah, I don't know much about the second movie. I think I saw one trailer, but from what I remember, I think that either maybe the sorority moves in next door or something.
Yeah, I think I saw this too now that you say that. I saw it in a theater.
And they need to, like, call in Zac Efron to help them get rid of it. So I think they're on the same team.
Yeah, awesome. Then that would be good, yeah.
I think. I'm not exactly sure, but I sort of hope that that's what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Agreed, definitely.
What I like about, you know, I think that the Zac Efron character here is, even though it's like in a comedy, it's not necessarily like a character-based comedy, like it's just all jokes, like the jokes, like the humor's not coming from like who they are, just sort of like what they're saying. I think that he's a much more well-defined character in this than he was in Waif, because in Waif he's just like this guy who's like, I just need one song, I'm gonna be a millionaire, and then he basically does
that. Yeah, it was pretty one-dimensional.
Like here, you know, what he really wants is to get his name, his face, or his picture on that board, right? He wants to be part of this fraternity history about, like, supposedly
this made up fraternity history
and invented the Putin rally and all this different stuff. But what he really needs is, like, he needs to be remembered. And, you know, by the end of the movie, he finally gets that when he sort of takes one for the team and lets all of his buddies go, and he sort of takes all the blame for the party. And so even though he's not going to be remembered maybe for future generations of the fraternity, all of his friends are going to remember, like, that he actually did something really good for them.
He was pretty selfless. That was pretty cool. Yeah, he gets to that point where he's talking to Dave Franco, and he's saying about how, like, you start to realize that he was getting scared of not being remembered and realizing that, like, his college times were up, that he was going to, like, have to become an adult soon. I mean, I think that's a pretty good point to touch on for a movie like this. Like, I guess we get that sometimes, but this one seemed a little bit more serious to me. I like that. It was good. It plays to his acting. Like, it shows, like, how good of an actor he was. Like, it was believable, you know?
Absolutely. But at the same time, they also know that they have Zac Efron in their movie, and they're not going to let that opportunity go to waste and, like,
have him shirtless as much as possible. Exactly.
And, you know, like,
two huge veiny dicks.
He says something, I don't remember, I think it's when he's showing Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne around, and he says, like, welcome to paradise. I'm like, oh, he is cold. Like, he's the same, like, you know, like, this is the greatest house that we're ever going to live in.
Yeah, I wonder if he's really, like, actually, I think in the movie, in the very beginning of the movie, there was a lot of really cool references. One was, they're, like, on that first phone call, you know, like, when their friend calls them right before baby's first rave, she says some cool things, very appropriate for the timing now. She says, Prince might perform there.
I know.
Right?
Made me real sad.
Yeah, made me really sad, too. And two, she says, this is going to be the best night of my life. And when she said that, I just lose it. I was like, oh, yes, it's going to be the best night of your life.
That's really fun. I mean, like, I got real sad about the prince, but then, I mean, later in the movie, when they're having the dance-off, I mean, it's the same thing that if we actually saw that rave scene, something that I would think of, but when they're having the dance-off toward the middle of the movie, when they're trying to get Dave Franco and that girl
Operation
to hook up with
each other. Operation Hose Before Bros, yeah.
Yep. I was like, how much better would this party be if Cole was spinning? You know what I mean? Like,
like
it's all, like, weird, like, late 2000s, you know, like Fergie and stuff. Like, it's just, like, all weird. Like, it fits the scene, but I sort of wish that, you know, we had, like a BPM meter and, like, you know, saw
I want the crossover, the neighbors, We Are Your Friends crossover movie where he becomes a DJ, right? And then Seth Rogen's just in there, just with him. Like, he becomes his manager or something. That would be awesome.
One line that I really like, that going back to what we were talking about a little bit ago, is that, like, the movie from start to finish never forgets that, like, Zac Efron is his heartthrob, and like you were saying, he's shirtless as much as possible. But they're talking about the girls, because the girls at the sister sorority or whatever that are always over all love Stella. They all think she's adorable. They love that Rose Byrne's a mom. They love, you know, how she and Seth Rogen are as a couple. And then Rose Byrne asked the girl, played by Halston Sage. I don't remember what her name is in this movie.
Yeah, definitely not.
She's like, her name is Brooke.
Oh yeah,
of course.
Yeah, that's right.
And she's like, "How did you and you know Teddy? it's Teddy, right?
I think it's Teddy. Yeah.
How did you and Teddy get together?" And she's just like, "Oh, I saw him. He saw me." And
she's like, "So romantic.
Oh, crazy romantic story."
Yeah, that was great.
Just like, oh, these two beautiful people saw each other and like, yep, that's it. Like, that's just what's gonna happen.
I love that the girls that are cast in this movie, they make them like the most like shell of a person ever. Like, they have no substance. Like, the girls purposely have absolutely no. So I saw him, he saw me, and like, that's just it.
Right. I mean, like, Rose Byrne is fleshed out, and she's actually kind of, I think, maybe the best character in the movie. But yeah, all these sorority girls, I mean, I guess because the movie's not about them, and you could say that it's really kind of like a sexist movie or whatever. They're sort of showing a point that, like, these are the kind of girls that these, like, dumb guys are into, and, like, it just, it's almost more of a reflection on, you know, Zac Efron and Dave Franco, like, oh, they're just into her because she's beautiful. They don't really care about anything else.
I mean, also, this has been done in a bunch of other movies. They're just playing along with it. I mean, they should have depicted it here. I don't know, maybe not, but it fits into the, like, frat movie. Guys, like, dumb girls that are really pretty, and, like, this is what happens.
And I'm really sort of interested to see how the second one does that, because I think there's going to be a lot more
of girl scenes. Yeah, it's going to be predominantly focused on the women. I wonder who they're going to cast for this. They should get Vanessa Hudgens and have her in it.
I think the lead girl is... Chloe Grace Moretz.
Who's that?
Is the girl. She was a hit girl in Kick-Ass.
Oh, okay.
She was also in a couple other movies more recently. Apparently Selena Gomez is in the second one.
Nice. I was hoping for the cast of Spring Breakers. Like, they're pretty much perfect for it.
Let me see. Who else?
What Selena Gomez. I remember this from the trailer now. She's like, yeah, she's really in this. Yeah, I forgot.
I don't really recognize too many other girls near the top. Abby Jacobson, who are you?
I don't know.
Oh, that's from Broad City. Okay, she's in it, apparently.
Oh, cool.
I don't think she's too old to be in
She's probably like their like older sorority sister or something.
Yeah, so it looks like the two main new characters are going to be Chloe Grace Moretz and Selena Gomez. And then it looks like pretty much everybody else is going to be back. So.
Awesome, that's good.
Kiersey Clemons, who was the girl in Dope. Did you see Dope?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
Dope's good. So the girl that's sort of friends with the main character in that, she's in this too. So that's cool.
Cool. On this note, do you want to talk about how awesome all the cameos in this movie were? We had some great cameos throughout this whole movie. One of my personal favorites is Rafi from The League.
Yep, Jason Mantzoukas as the doctor.
Yeah, because he comes out and goes, "Your baby has AIDS." That's how this could have gone. I love that he plays Rafi in everything. He's a great character.
Yeah.
He just plays Rafi. I mean, even in this like new HBO show, Animals. Like there was a. Did you watch this?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the one where you have Rafi being Rafi as an animal, but he just still exists as Rafi.
It's just like Zac Efron's painted into this corner, and like Jason Mantzoukas is into this corner.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he can't be anything else now. I want to see him in a series.
It's kind of great. Yeah, I think he probably has done stuff a little bit different. I'm trying to think. I mean, I've seen him in so many different things. He was in that movie Sleeping with Other People. I mean, he wasn't a huge character in that movie, but he was more serious. I don't know. It's just sort of like, I mean, everything around him was kind of crazy in that movie, so he was sort of grounded. I don't know. It's just sort of weird. But yeah, he's great in this movie. Lisa Kudrow as the dean of the school is great in her two scenes.
Yeah, I think that they picked her. She kind of reminds me of the lady that plays... Oh, the really crazy one. She was in a bunch of other movies. She pretty much plays the same role as Lisa Kudrow did in this movie. Shit. She was in Glee, I think. Or maybe...
Oh, Jane Lynch?
Yes. That's who I was thinking of.
She reminds me a lot of a couple different characters. Like Jane Lynch has been in a few different of the Christopher Guest movies. And like other characters or other people from that world, just like this heightened, like, I don't know if zaniness is the right word, but just like, it's like a little bit of mania. It's just like, it's crazy just for sort of like crazy sake, and it works.
Yeah, it's like crazy old white woman. And then like, because Lisa Kudrow plays, like, I really like her character being the dean. She played a good role. I'm glad that she was in this. And she was in Kimmy Schmidt recently, too. That was cool.
Yeah. Other people that were even, like, in the movie a little bit more. Like, everybody in the movie, I think, is cast... I don't know if they're cast really well, or they're just people that I love watching. But, like, Hannibal Buress as the cop is great.
Oh, Hannibal Buress as the cop was great. Yeah, that is definitely a really good one. I like that one, too.
Gerard Carmichael as the the fraternity brother who, like, basically is friends with Hannibal Buress, who I think in the second is, like, Hannibal's partner. He's the black kid who is in the fraternity.
Okay, yeah.
He has the Carmichael show on NBC. He's a stand-up. He's really funny. I think in the second one, he and Hannibal are partners. Like, they're cops together.
Oh, really? That would be really
cool. Very excited about that.
Yeah, that would be really funny. Oh, man, that would be awesome. I like that.
Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne's friends, Ike Barinholtz and Carla Gallo, are both perfect in their roles. Ike Barinholtz not afraid to drop the N-bomb a couple times in this movie.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. I agree. I do love the Obama says the come to your party phone call as well. That was pretty great.
That scene, like, so there's a couple different parts in this movie where they just go back and forth doing, like, the same kind of joke. Like, they're doing the impressions of people invited to the movie.
Yeah, this had to be improv'd, right? Like, it seems like it. Like, they're just doing...
There's probably, like, so much extra footage that wasn't...
Oh, man, I know. We need to see the outtakes.
What's sort of weird, maybe, is that, like, sometimes it works for me and sometimes it doesn't. Like, I love that celebrity impression scene, but when Zac Efron and Dave Franco are going back and forth about, like, rhyming bros before hoes and stuff...
Yeah, it kind
like,
of loses kinda it. Funny. They should have cut it a little bit, I agree.
Because that goes on for so... Like, they each do, like, 10, and, like, it's cool. Like, it's clever, but it's just, like, a little bit too much.
Yeah, I had... They had one of my favorites, though. One of my favorites was Male Erection Before One Direction. That was... that was pretty good. But, yeah, no, they do get really bad at the end, and it seemed like they, like, let them run it out, and I... Intentionally... But, it didn't work for me. I agree.
Now, one question that I have for you, in terms of, like, a broader scale, is who do you think is really at fault here for this beef? Is it Zac Efron for being, you know, a loud fraternity brother who basically says, screw them? Or is it Seth and Rose who, you know, basically break their promise that they're not going to call the cops. Because, like, the whole big conflict is that,
yeah,
you know, they go over when it's first, when it's a loud party.
Party with them.
Party with them. And then it seems like the next night they have another party, and they call Zac Efron 10 times, and he doesn't answer, and so then they call the cops. And that's the breaking of the promise. So I guess it's sort of, like, ambiguous, but, like, whose fault do you think it is? Not that it really matters, but, like, is it Zac Efron's fault that the whole beef happens? Or because it seems, yeah, like he sort of wants it, or is it the couple's fault for essentially breaking their promise?
No, I definitely think it's Zac Efron's fault. He even says, like, before that, like, they're like, okay, just, like, you know, keep it down for us, and he's like, I'll give it a college try. So, like, I think that he, like, knows that he wasn't gonna keep it down, which means he's breaking his end of the promise, you know what I mean? So, I think that it stems from him, but they're, like, you know, young frat kids, like, I wouldn't expect him to keep that promise anyways, so...
Right, but what I like is that when he comes back over, like, when Hannibal shows up, and he's, like, visibly distraught, even though it goes away, he just says, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the best lines in the movie.
He's their dad, and he's just, like, this old guy who's just like, you know, I'm not mad at you, I just expected more from you.
Yeah, that's always a great line.
They feel so bad.
Yeah, they definitely do. That was a really good part of the movie. See, again, like, he's a great actor. I'm, like, really surprised. You know, like, the delivery of that was great.
One scene that I wish that we got more of, I wish we saw, or maybe, I don't know if I want more of, but, like, it's the next scene, like, after they realize that they can't, the fraternity's not going away, that they're stuck in the house next door, and they call the real estate agent over, who I don't know who she is, but she's also great in this movie.
Yeah, she's really
funny.
She's
only in one scene. Outside, they're having the Robert De Niro party.
This is great, yeah. I think this is my favorite scene of the movie.
I wish that there was more of this, but I'm not sure that I do. Maybe I love it so much because there's not a lot.
Agreed,
you know?
Yeah. It left you wanting more. If they would have ran this one out, I think it would have got really, really bad. Definitely enjoyed the Robert De Niro party. Dave Franco was killing it. Like, like, he was so convincingly committed to being De Niro in Meet the Fockers. It was amazing. I wonder if I do wonder if he was coming up with these, or if these were, like, scripted lines, because they were really funny, and I didn't expect them at all.
And I also like how the fraternity is just so dumb. Like, Gerard Carmichael is dressed up like Samuel L. Jackson from Jackie Brown, but he's quoting Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I do love that part.
Like, calls him out on it, but, like, they don't care. Like, they're just having fun. And then they all do the Pacino hoo-ha. They're just like, you're not, like, none of this is consistent. But because it's, like, all over the place, it's so funny. And I think, like, this is, like, one of my favorite, if not my favorite scene in the movie, just because it's, like, small and weird and just, like, really funny.
Yeah, and then you have, like, the Seth Rogen and his wife, the commentary that they're giving, where they're like, this isn't even the right movie. Like, this is Son of a Woman. Like, yeah, Seth Rogen is really good at these, like, scenes where he will throw in, like, his own commentary that just, like, just simply, like, it's just really funny, even though, like, they're things that you're thinking too, just for him to say them makes it really funny. And then you see, like, the real estate agent, like, dancing in the background or whatever. Yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes.
I like when movies, and it usually happens in comedies that it works the best, is that, like, when movies acknowledge that other movies exist, or that, like,
oh, yeah, there's a lot of reference to that in here.
And, like, later in the movie, when Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne are arguing about being Kevin James, they both want Kevin James. I'm like, nobody wants to be Kevin James.
Yeah, I have that in my notes, too.
Responsible one. They want to be the irresponsible one who, like, has the other person sort of clean up after their mess and be the one that, like, is the rock. And they're like, no, like, I want to be Kevin James.
Yeah, both want to be Kevin James is such a weird thing to think. I've never imagined wanting to be Kevin James in my life, so...
We forgot to talk about one of your, I'm sure, maybe your favorite character in the movie, McLovin, Christopher Mintz.
Yeah. I love McLovin, and he's another one. He plays the same character in every movie, you know? Like, after Superbad, he's pretty much been that character forever. What was the one about the energy drink with Stifler from American Pie? What was this movie?
Role Models.
Yeah, Role Models. Yeah, he's the same character in Role Models is super bad as in this movie.
But I like to think that the character he plays in this movie sort of leaves college, graduates college, and then moves to Venice and is the same character on Fleet. Like, he's, like, the same age. You know what I mean?
Just, right? Oh, I didn't even piece those two together. Yeah, this is just, like, it's like he started out in Superbad in high school, went to college here with Zac Efron, and then became the kid from Flaked. Yeah, that's a nice, I would like them to piece all these worlds together. Wow.
And that instead of becoming, like, you know, this tech millionaire or whatever he has in Flaked, he makes his fortune on his, like, massive-sized dildo that they make, which is such a great little moment that after Seth and Rose Byrne flood their basement, they're like, how are we going to pay for this? And, like, we're just standing here with
dicks
in our hands.
Dicks
and the way that they
hands.
Just, like, everybody delivers the line differently, and it's so great. Like, dicks
in our hands.
Dicks in our hands.
Yeah.
And then they just all create the mold, and then they all sell it. I love that it's so underplayed, but I love the fact that Rose Byrne bought one of them. Like, it's just like, because Seth Rogen's like, who would even want one of these? And she's just, like, standing there just, like, staring. Like, the joke goes by, like, they move on.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, the undertow of McLovin having a huge dick jokes throughout the movie is really great. Their friends go over, they go over to the party, and she's like, I'm wearing a choker, and it's just his dick around her neck. Like, I love all of these, like, the little hints of him, and in the end when he picks him up and he's like, you're so light, you're like half dick, and he's like, thank you, sir, and he throws him. all the McLovin dick jokes were really funny.
So now a question for you, as a big Zac Efron fan, but as a straight male, would you spend $50 on buying a Zac Efron dildo?
What? No. What? Like, what kind of question was that?
I don't know, just like as like a memento from the movie.
Okay, from a girl's perspective, definitely. Like, if I was a girl, and actually even like our age, you know, you grew up watching High School Musical. I think that he has a career in this. If he was making dick molds, I think he could sell a few.
I wonder, so you know like how every movie wraps and they get, the cast and crew get like a t-shirt or a hat or like whatever, I wonder if they got, like, I could see this movie like them giving away like Neighbors branded dildos.
Yeah, you definitely, definitely. I wonder if they all got their own, that would be really funny. I would keep it if I had to make one of these, or I don't even think they had to make them, but the fact that they like had them, you know, like in the movie, I would definitely want my own. I think it would be pretty funny.
Just something like wildly, like, you know.
Yeah, I would leave that shit on my mantle, man.
Use it, yeah. It's just something like a little prop display from the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But then we get to the Operation Hose Before Bros, and I have a really important question for you. How many shirts is Dave Franco wearing? Like 6 or 7?
Yeah, he has at least 3. I counted 3 collars.
More than that, I can tell you that much. I thought it was 5, and I think I saw more. I didn't pause it, but like, he's wearing so many shirts.
Yeah, I really love that they all of the jokes about frat bros that they do, they exaggerate so much. Like, in every scene of the movie, Zac Efron's wearing a different version of his frat's shirt. You know what I mean? Like, he has, like, 50 tank tops of it. He has, like, long sleeves. He has, like, every possible version of this shirt that just says the frat's name on the front of it that he can have. And that, I like that part a lot.
Yeah, whenever he's got a shirt on, he's always wearing a shirt that's a different version
of
the same shirt.
And when he doesn't have his shirt on, he has the frat Greek lettering tattooed on his arm anyways. So he's just like a frat billboard. I love it.
After Operation Hose Before Bros is successful, and after we get, like, the greatest, like, badass walk away from Rose Byrne, that as she makes them kiss, and, like, she, like, does that, like, slow-mo turn away, and I think, like, blows out her finger guns, like, we get sort of, like, a drug-fueled haze a little bit. I think it's more alcohol than drug, but just, like, how in Waif we got that really trippy scene.
Yeah, the PCP scene, yeah. It's relatable, I definitely think so.
It's just sort of like the world is collapsing in on him, and this is not, like, a good experience. This is like I just saw my best friend and my girlfriend like going upstairs to have sex or whatever. It's sort of like Requiem for a Dreamy, or like a little bit like Spike Lee movie, which is like focused like real tight on him and just like crazy motion and like everything's blurring around him. And just
like he's standing still, everything's still happening around him, his world's crashing down on him.
Everything from this part of the movie, like, things have been going so well for him that, you know, they moved into this house. It's a great house. He was sort of best friends with Seth Rogen temporarily. Even after that ends, he's still got all of his frat brothers. You know, they're having fun. And then, like, this begins, like, the sort of this downward slope for him, where not only is he not going to be remembered, but they're starting to get in trouble. You know,
hitting the second half of his last year of college. It's starting to become real.
They go to that career fair, and, like, the AT&T guy is like, no, we're basically looking for people who are smarter than you because, like, you're too dumb to work for AT&T.
Which is pretty bad, man. That's
everybody's just, like, slapping him in the face, just like,
maybe you should go work for Comcast.
Like, you're never going to be better than this. Like, this is exactly going to be forever.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I know kids in real life that had to deal with this, for sure. Like, if you spend all your time partying and not studying, this is what happens. Stay in school.
But what's cool about his character, I think, is that deep down, under this, like, frat bro exterior, he's a good guy, and that to get the third strike, to get them kicked off campus, Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne and Ike Barinholtz recruit Ass Juice, who's a pledge, and they get him to wear those glasses.
Yeah, the goofiest fucking glasses ever. And he did look just like J.J. Abrams, didn't he?
He did.
That joke was so poignant. It was, like, dead on.
I wonder if they cast him for that, or, like, they just, like, put it on, and like, oh, wow. Like,
no,
you look
I definitely think that it just happened, and they were like, oh, shit, you look just like J.J. Abrams. They're like, keep it, keep it.
He goes, and, like, they're doing, like, that, like, elephant thing where they're all naked, and they're just, like,
walk,
all...
Yeah.
Ass Juice, like, stands up for himself. He's like, I'm not doing this. And then, like, Zac Efron's like, you're in so much trouble. Follow me. And then they go in the other room. He's like, hey, man, like, what's going on? Like,
yeah, you seem kind of strung out. Yeah.
And, like, he's just, like a genuinely good guy. And they're like, oh, we didn't plan for nice. Like, we don't know how to handle
yeah.
this. But, like, it's good that, like, he's, you know, just sort of like in the beginning of the movie where they're buddy-buddy. Like, he's not... He's more than just, like, this dumb Greek. Like, he's, like, this good guy. He's this...
No, he cares.
You know,
he definitely cares.
Yeah.
He cares about the fraternity. And I think, yeah, as much as he wants to just be known for being on the wall, he doesn't. He, like, actually wants them to succeed. I mean, not in school, but he, like, wants them to not have anything bad happen to them. He's constantly taking care of them, I think. Like, even when the meeting and stuff like that, he's the only one that's, like, handling it well. So, yeah, he does have the frat's best interest at heart, I think.
Because really, the most important thing, the thing that sort of everything keeps coming back to is, like, the only thing that he really cares about in his life is this fraternity.
Yeah.
And that he's going to take care of his brothers, he's going to do all this different stuff, no matter what happens. Like, he wants to be remembered, he wants them to be legends, he wants to have, like, the best party, he wants to be on the wall. Like, no matter what happens, like, he's not really looking beyond these next 3 or 4 months. Like, this is, like, everything that he's known, everything he cares about. And, you know, even though hazing is part of their ritual or whatever, at the end of the day, he wants these guys to respect him and not hate him and sort of, you know, still be okay with what they're doing.
Yeah.
But, like, at the same time, like, as he's sort of doubling down on, like, all this Greek stuff, Dave Franco's like, man, give it up. Like, we're going to be graduating. Like, we need to think about careers. And then they, like, sort of get back into another huge fight here. And, like, it's sort of,
yeah, that's,
you know,
that scene where he's, like, sitting there, like, vaping in the... In the living room by himself or whatever.
And I think Dave Franco says, like, you're going, like, full villain mode here on me.
Yeah, yeah. It was very villainous. I liked it.
But I love that Dave Franco's like, hey, I'm a psychology minor, man. Like,
oh, that was such a great line. He's like, you don't think I saw that? I'm a psychology minor.
He's like, why do you think you're obsessed with that old couple next door? Like, you're afraid of getting old. And Zac Efron's like, no, I'm not. It's another example of, like, Dave Franco could be this sort of, like, buddy with nothing more going on in his life and not just sort of this one-note character. But, you know, as much of, like, a joke as that line is, like, because, I mean, a psychology minor, like, what does that mean? You took, like, 3 classes?
Yeah.
Like, at the same time, like, he's, like, this insightful guy who, like, he sort of has this other layer to him that, like, in a comedy, sort of, like, it's cool, it's sort of refreshing to see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. None of the characters were very one-dimensional. Like, for it being a comedy, they were more complex than any character in We Are Your Friends. And it was refreshing. It was.
Absolutely. So then, yeah, so as, like, I guess, like, sort of, like, that's, like, the last straw that, you know, he wants to prove to himself.
He goes off the deep end now. Yeah.
And he goes over next door, and he's just like, you know, even after we're gone, like, this is going to stay in our fraternity. Like, you know, there's going to be the summer. There's going to be parties every night. He's like, there's going to be hundreds and thousands of Teddies. And all this time that he's thinking, he's like, Teddy's just an idea. I'm like, he's basically Tyler Durden. Like, he's creating his own.
Yeah, he is. Project. And I think he's finally hearing that he knows that, like, it doesn't matter. Like, he is not going to be remembered, and there's always going to be a douchebag to run his frat anyway. And, like, he's also coming to a realization as he's, like, going off the deep end. It's, like, simultaneous in this speech.
As he's sort of, like, doubling down on them and, like, making sure, like, hey, like, you guys realize that, like, we're never going away. Like, they're on probation at this point for, like, the last party that they threw or the last strike that they got. This is when, like, the final plan is put in motion that they're going to send that letter that says they're off probation so that they can get in trouble again and get kicked off campus or kicked out of the house or whatever. And I love everything about, like, what Ike Barinholtz, like, this is, like, when Ike Barinholtz is, like, time to shine in this movie. They send the letter and, like, he leaves that little clue, like, the school stamp, instead of being in Latin, is in Hebrew.
Yeah.
Like, it's in Jewish. He's like, yeah, like, I left the clue, so, like, you know, so
it's game over. Yeah, it's like your calling card. He's like, yeah, but you do that at the end, not in the middle of it. We haven't finished yet.
And then that's when they realize that they're not actually off probation. that's when they do the hootie hooing, and they
nice,
you know,
outcast
they
reference. Outcast I appreciated that a lot.
And Rose Byrne's like, "What is hootie hooing?" And then that's when they just like sing like basically all the lyrics of the song.
And he keeps going, and he just keeps going. Like the moment was clearly over. That was another scene where I'm glad they ran longer on that one, because he just keeps saying the lyrics, and I'm sure that they wanted him to stop, but it worked well.
And they get to like that hard end, and he just like keeps going. They're like, "Whoa, whoa, man!" Like, and that's when so like. Like they hootie hoo and the party is over and Hannibal's on the way, the cop's on the way, and Gerard Carmichael goes outside and they're just like talking. I'm like, I could watch this scene all day. Like, you know, Hannibal's like, "Hey man, you trying to get rid of me?" He's like, "Oh no, like let's talk about your problems." And like they're just there, like, I don't know, like Hannibal just seems like this like bored cop in a small town, just like,
yeah, he's definitely just like a college police officer. I think every college hopefully has like a cool like one police officer that like kind of, he knows what's going on, like he has to just keep it under control. You know, but he's not going to like try to bust them all the time.
And finally, as he's driving away, like Rose Byrne sort of like pulls the last straw and like shoots a firework right into his car.
Yeah, he just blows it up.
What is he, like Delta Psi? Like, I'm under attack from Delta Psi?
Yeah, or something like that. This is so funny. I love Hannibal Buress. I'm so glad that he was in this movie.
And I'm so glad he's coming back for the second one. Like, I think, like, based on what I was seeing before, like, everybody's back for the second one, which is good, because, like, when you have a cast this big...
Yeah, this was actually a really big cast, right? Like, there was a lot of, like, really famous people in this movie. I'm surprised that they got everyone to come back. You know, they didn't have to write anyone off.
Which I'm very excited for. When does that movie even come out? I think maybe...
I mean, if we started seeing trailers for it, I saw one in the theater. It shouldn't be that... It should be pretty soon.
Oh, in like a month, May 20th.
Oh, wow. Wow, it's going to be a summer movie, too. Okay.
Summer movie. Yeah, because this came out May 9th 2 years ago, so it's just like, you know, a start to the blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the beginning of the movie season.
And so this big ending sequence where like there's like literally like fights and like they're throwing beer cans.
Hot house, hot box in the house, yeah.
But what I like, my favorite part about this is that like Zac Efron knows he's dumb. Like he's so dumb he knows he's dumb. He's like, "I'm a supernova, man. Burn bright, die young." And like this is like when he like lets them all go. Like, "I don't have a future, but you all have futures." And, like, I realize that, like, this is all I'm ever going to be, but, like, I'm a supernova. Like, I was never meant for more than this. His, like, recognition, his, like, acknowledgement of that is, like, what's going to give him that, like, that memory that, like, people are going to remember him, at least his brothers are going to remember him for, like, this moment, this, like, selfless act that he did. Like, it's just great that he realizes that.
Yeah, yeah, this was, yeah, I think that he was coming to this in the speech, and then, like, after this happened, and he's committed now to being remembered. He wants to be infamous.
It's great, and, like, you know, this is, like,
that, I love you, bro moment, and maybe him and Dave Franco, where they just say, I am convinced that Seth Rogen pushed them to do all these homoerotic scenes together. Like, I know that he was there just to be like, "You know what we should do? Just a scene of you guys saying I love you back and forth, like, real serious." And, like, okay, we can do it, you know? Like,
you literally have James Franco's brother in the movie.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, it had to do this. Like, they had to do this, and it's just such a nice nod to, like, all the other Seth Rogen world movies, you know? Like, it had to exist like this, so.
And what I guess the movie ends in a place where they probably get kicked out of that house, right? Which is, I'm imagining, is why that house is, like, on the market.
Yeah, they reference that later. They say that they have, like, a nice, like, house far off campus or something.
And Zac Efron has graduated, I guess, and now he's just a shirtless model outside
Abercrombie. No, I don't think he graduated. I think he got thrown out because he says he's taking night classes to get his degree. So I think that he was just like dicking around so much that he didn't even graduate.
But like, I like that they end in a place where he and Seth Rogen are friends, and like, you know, Seth Rogen is like the obtainable goal for Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah, he's the relaxed fit. That's right. That was such a good joke, too.
And everything just sort of ends on a positive note. Like, you know, the fraternity got kicked out of the house, and Zac Efron maybe got thrown out of school, but, like, everybody's sort of okay with where they are.
Yeah, it's not, like, perfect closure like we saw in We Are Your Friends. Like, you know, there's not, it's not all good. Everything just, like, comes full circle and just, like, perfectly ends. Like, there's a lot of loose ends and stuff. But yeah, I was comforted by the ending. It was a good comedic ending for me. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to leave a comedy on, like, a weird thing. They set it up well for a second one with, no, style Zac Efron and Seth Rogen are friends at the end, and like I think that he's really making him laugh in all those scenes too, because Zac Efron's just like laughing way too hard, like standing there with Seth Rogen having his shirt off, like them both posing, like that's just way too funny for him to not be actually laughing.
What I love is the movie ends on my favorite character. They're just dressing like they just acknowledge that the fact that they're like their parents, like this is like what their life is now.
Yeah,
and so like they're, you know, in June or whatever, they're putting together their calendar for the new year, and they're just doing all Stella as like TV characters, and like
yeah,
and they're gonna do Don Draper next, and then the credits is just the baby dressed up as every different character from the movie. Like the movie knows what it does really well, and it knows its parts, and it knows its actors and its characters, and I think it, you know, like this baby is adorable, and they just know that like people are gonna want to see more of it, and just like
yeah,
what
better
way than have it dressed up as Heisenberg?
Yeah, yeah. And again, this is like we were saying before. Like, I'm glad that it acknowledges that it exists in a world that we live in today. So like they reference Breaking Bad. It's really funny. I also like at the call at the end when they get called again for a perfect "We Are Your Friends" crossover. The two friends are at Burning Man, and I would love to see Cole go there, DJ at Burning Man too.
But yeah.
It's just absolutely my own wishes.
But yeah, so that's pretty much Neighbors. Basically the point of like what we've been saying all along is like it's a really, really funny movie. Like it's a genuinely like one of my favorite
comedies.
It was good,
yeah. I'd seen it before and like I hadn't watched it since, and I watched it again, I laughed again. Like the jokes were really good. It's a good movie. It's not like a classic comedy that I would say anybody has to definitely see, but it was good. It's entertaining.
It's really funny, but it also, like, I mean, not that we really have, like, a high bar to compare it to with We Are Your Friends. It stacks up in terms of, like, the character development. Like, it's much better than that. And, like, it
yeah.
just, like, it's not just, like, a stupid comedy that, like, it has funny jokes in it. Like, it's actually, like, develops characters and, like, relationships, and, like, it does a good job.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of these Seth Rogen movies, like, they touch on stuff like this. I like that. You see a lot more complexity. And I do like that they address, like, relationships. For me, it's funny to see, like, becoming an older dude and, like, having a house now and stuff like that. They, like, you can relate to both ends of the spectrum. I'm kind of somewhere in between in my life personally, so it's yeah, you know, like I can relate to both sides. It was good for me.
Is there anything else about the movie that we didn't talk about that you wanted to mention? I think we pretty much covered a lot of it, but anything else left in your notes that we didn't get to?
Let me see. Oh, the old people reminiscing moment at the end, that was something I want to talk about, when she's like, I love going to the container store and buying containers. And he's like, I love that our soap is shaped like seashells. That's just like very relatable. I'm definitely at that point in my life. Rachel and I do dumb shit like that all the time, so it's pretty funny. Like, IKEA is pretty fun to go to now. It's someplace that I would hate before, but it's interesting.
Now that you have a house to fill and like
exactly, yeah, shit like that. Yeah,
I do like that they have that pillow. I don't know if you saw the pillow, but they don't make a joke about it, but they have a pillow that just says, carpe that fucking diem. Like, it's just like...
That's,
you know,
awesome, yeah.
It's like two young people. I guess it's just like, you know, it's homeowners. Like, nobody's like, who buys a pillow? Like, college kids don't buy pillows like that, you know? Like,
exactly.
Like basically decorative throw pillow.
We've hit this point in our generation where, like, we were these kids, but, like, I think that us growing up, we're still funny and relatable enough that we can have stuff like this. Like, I don't think our parents' generation would ever buy a carpe fucking diem pillow, but I can definitely see like a lot of my friends that are my age or a little bit older buying something like that and finding amusement in it.
Like, that's like the sort of like the perfect blend of like what you were just saying. It's like where you are and where you were, and sort of like, or where you're gonna be and where you were, and like where you are now, and that's just sort of like this perfect blend of the two worlds.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny that they kind of paint it in a black and white situation, but then they touch on how there's all this gray area where, like, the kids are planning to become adults and the adults still want to act like kids, and, like, you have this, like, transitionary period and stuff that goes on in between. Yeah, the pillow sums it up, man. Good point. I didn't even notice the pillow.
This is the third time I've seen the movie. I think it was the first time I saw the pillow, so it's just, like, in the background of one scene. I don't remember when, but it's just, like, on their couch. It's just, like, a great little, nice little touch.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else in the notes that you wanted to mention, or is that pretty much
about it?
Good. So we will probably have at least one bonus episode.
I'm excited for
this
it.
This month, Dirty Grandpa hits Blu-ray and Neighbors 2 hits theaters in May. So we'll see if we can get both of those done and up. And then the next one, in terms of
going backwards,
scheduled, going backwards, but also keeping up with things that come out since. And then the next one going backwards is That Awkward Moment from...
Oh, this is going to be fucking
terrible.
A year
or two ago.
I'm dreading watching this damn movie.
With Miles Teller and Michael
Which
B.
I love. Yeah, I do love Miles Teller, though.
It's Whiplash and Creed together with Colton. I mean, it's, but like in a movie that's probably going to be like not fun to watch.
When you put it like that, it could possibly be good. Hopefully it's just We Are Your Friends bad or As Funny as Neighbors. But I mean, I feel like it's going to be somewhere in between both of them, which is going to be actually bad.
We'll see. That'll be up on June 1st, and like look for at least one, if not two, bonus episodes between now and then.
Yeah.
For all things Zack Attack and Cage Club and Keanu Club and Monkey Club, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub. Find past episodes, see what's coming up in the future, all sorts of fun stuff at those two places. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe too.
And we'll see you next time on Zack Attack. Okay, dirty, gonna represent it to the dead time. Born and bred up on the street top. Get to the money and the sweet spot. And forever hollering. When we see God, been dressing dirty, dirty, gon' represent it to the T-top. Born and bred up on the street top. Get to the money and the sweet spot. And forever hollering. When we see God, cops and robbers, niggas be buying to get them dollars and cents. They get in the slump like baseball players when they shot on their rent.